Jeffrey Smith with us this hour. His latest film is called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, that you can watch with the linked up website, of course, protectnaturenow.com. We're going to come back and continue chatting with Jeffrey and take your calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Jeffrey Smith with us. Jeffrey, I went on Amazon.com during the break, and they've got those little kits all over the place.
I know. It's so innocent. It's so like, let's give Johnny and Jill a chance to create new life forms, and we'll name it after them, and they'll be released, like the star registry. Let's name a star after you. But the problem is, once they're released, there is no recall. And although most of the microbes, certainly the microbes from the kits, are not designed to survive, but when you spend about $2,000, and it'll be less soon, you can genetically engineer a lot of things for the price of dinner. You can get a little mail order thing, and with that mail order piece, you can create a new organism. And so we're democratizing the gene pool, which is an extremely dangerous scenario. And what I say is, not only do we need to lock it down by the law, but our ProtectNatureNow.com campaign is, we realize that laws don't, they're not long-term. I was flown to Poland once by the government and gave a press conference with the Minister of Environment praising their non-GMO position. A week later, that government got voted out of office and a pro-GMO government took over. I was also in Thailand. A similar thing happened there, mm-hmm. where one set of laws can be replaced by regime change or special interest influence. So what we want to do is we want to educate people, and I want to thank you so much for having me on tonight at Earth Day, because you have a tremendously aware audience, people that don't just take the word from it from the mainstream, but realize that there's something going on, and in this case, what we don't know could hurt us in a big way. So we want the entire world to understand that we have come to an inevitable time in human civilization where we can easily and cheaply redirect the streams of evolution for all time, and that that actually can have damaging effects on all living beings and all future generations. And with the two new technology, it means we have a new responsibility as humanity. And so we want that in the schools, we want that in films, in books, in articles. So we have a plan to bring that to popular culture around the world, and we need people's help by going to ProtectNatureNow.com and getting the information out on that advocacy platform to hundreds of groups, including elected officials.
What is new in the field of GMO foods?
Well, we continue to see Roundup research damning it as very, very dangerous at very low levels. We also have a new GMO that came out fairly recently, the pink pineapple.
The pink pineapple?
Pink pineapple, $49 online. Please don't buy it. That's the 12th genetically engineered food crop. But you also have these gene-edited foods that we don't think have entered the marketplace, but there's no requirement. For example, there was a gene-edited mushroom designed not to turn brown when it was sliced. It's similar to the apple and potato that were genetically engineered not to turn brown when they were sliced. But they used a gene editing technique to knock out the gene that creates the browning effect. And so they sent a letter to the USDA and said, really, you don't have to regulate us, do that, do you? And they said, nope, there's none of our laws relate to what you're doing. So the USDA said no, the EPA doesn't have any interest, the FDA has no requirements, and so they can put it on the market without any labeling and without even informing consumers. But now, after they went through that exercise, research shows that that knockout method, which was from CRISPR, where it supposedly kills a gene or stops the gene from functioning, fails about one-third of the time. And when it fails, sometimes that organism produces proteins.
Something else.
Yeah, they could be very dangerous. They could be allergenic or deadly.
Now, why does nature brown something you slice anyway?
Well, that's a good question, and it's above my pay grade. But I'll tell you, when you don't brown, then the apple, for example, instead of turning brown, it'll just shrink. But we call it the Botox apple because it lies about its age. Now, the person that developed the potato that was genetically engineered not to brown, he ended up doing some research after he left the company and wrote a book describing it as the worst GMO. He said that the technology that was used to create it could theoretically reprogram our DNA if we ate the potato. Also, by hiding the browning, normally you'd cut away or throw away a potato that was brown. Because it hides it, you're not going to be able to see the mold and the toxins that could be growing there. And so that means that if you'll end up with more of the potatoes not rejected, more of the potatoes in the potato food supply that could be causing serious damage, including diseases, because it's hiding the evidence of problems.
Why are these companies playing around with this? Is it all about money?
Well, money and control. I mean, if you think about how big the control of food is, the food market is the biggest market in the world. And if you control the seed, you control the food. And if you can patent the seed and genetically engineer it, as Monsanto did, they're now Bayer, it becomes an incredible tool. And so we're in a situation where it's not only control from a country standpoint, I mean, from a company standpoint, but countries can also influence other countries. There's genetic engineering where you can basically spray something, and if a certain genetically engineered crop receives that spray, it will die, or it won't grow unless it receives that spray. So it basically enslaves the food and the people that want to eat the food. But it gets worse. There's something called the Terminator technology, which has not yet been deployed because of the international outcry, but it basically forces crops to create sterile seeds. Now, farmers have been saving seeds for centuries, and so there's the diversity of seeds.
And they replant them the next season, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they don't want, the biotech industry doesn't want that, because they want the farmers to buy
seeds
from the catalog.
Every year.
So they want to prevent the 1.7 billion farmers that save their seeds from doing it, so it'll force them to just buy the genetics that are in the catalog, which will dramatically reduce the biodiversity, which creates tremendous risk and vulnerability for a collapse of the food supply. So they're willing to risk that in order to make the sale.
Let's go to the phones. They're lining up for you, Jeffrey. Let's go to John in Butler, Pennsylvania to get us started. Hey, John, thanks for calling.
Thank you for this program. I heard the guest mentioned USA Today as maybe one outlier that has come out with some of this very unsettling information. I've been reading about it for years now on Global Research. The rest of the establishment or corporate media, as the guest has said, we shouldn't take the word of, has been covering this up until a couple of Friday days ago on USA Today. Op-ed page had an article about how the CDC and the FDA had been collaborating with the Pentagon and the CDC and the FDA to cover up these dangers. And there are hundreds of leaking laboratories for these kinds of genetically created weaponized pandemics in our country, while we're blaming one side and down the other. One lab, which the United States military was also involved in one Chinese city. I think this is a very politically motivated attempt to project the United States and the military-industrial CIA drug company complex crimes onto China as part of this plan to always have a boogeyman, a boogeyman that will justify 1,000 U.S. bases around the world, interventions around the world, and sanctions and subversion and overthrow of governments. And the only way to do that is to have that boogeyman and project all of the evil onto China or any of its trading partners, which has just a few.
All right, well, let's get Jeffrey's thoughts on that. Is that possible, Jeffrey? I mean, I think China is responsible for COVID-19, but are they the boogeyman?
You know, it's interesting that even the CDC lab, the anthrax and flu lab, had to get shut down because it accidentally exposed up to 75 scientists. And they also at the same week found that they had discovered live smallpox in vials in a storage area that had been there since the late 40s and 50s. And there was someone just carrying this rattling box to the lab, where if he had tripped and fallen, it could have been a pandemic. Now, in Wuhan, there was information that was exposed by Washington Post that the U.S. consulate there was very concerned that the safety of that biosecure level 4, which is the highest level of security, the only one that's in China, was not up to snuff, and they actually were asking visitors, for official visitors, State Department people, to visit so that they could report back to the United States to say, this is serious. This is an organization that's handling some of the most dangerous pathogens in the world, and they don't have the competence, and they don't have the procedures. So there was concern about that was exposed by the Washington Post. But to speak to John's point, it's not just China. It's the CDC in the United States. It's hundreds, as he said, hundreds of labs, over 1,000 incidents compiled by one reporter in USA Today. So we believe that containment is a myth. And if you're going to try and justify creating a potentially pandemic pathogen in order to, say, to develop a vaccine or to understand what you need to monitor in the environment, it's simply not justified. And we don't think Congress will allow it to go forward if we can present the right bills.
Some will believe, Jeffrey, that these are being orchestrated to control the world's population. Others say it's biowarfare. What do you say?
You know, I cannot read the tea leaves in terms of the motivation, but I can tell you there is a consistency of reductionist thinking where the scientists think in a very narrow band. They think that, oh, yeah, I can release bacteria that turns crops into alcohol and not think about what happens if that spreads around the world. They can release one thing here, and this happens over and over again, George. People do not think holistically. I say it's not rocket science. It's far more complicated. But in our educational system, it's not taught in a system format. It's taught in a specialist format, and that actually is destroying science because we're ending up creating as many side effects as we have today.
Let's go to Costa Mesa, California. Amelia's with us on the wild card line. Hello, Amelia.
Oh, you guys are bringing the perfect subject here tonight. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
The way you're talking about this, to me, this is as insidious. Well, it is insidious. It's equal to an atom bomb. This subject just makes me tooth-spitting mad, Jeffrey. I heard a guy talk in the 70s. He was a professor in Canada addressing his graduating class, and he was talking about this genetically weird stuff that we were doing with computers, and he was appealing to them. And he was saying, please, we have to make it so that no one can patent life forms. And I think what you said about our technology not keeping up the regulations, I want you to reemphasize your webpage and how vital it is. I think this is the Frankenfoods. I think this is equal to the atom bomb, personally.
Your thoughts, Jeffrey.
You know, Amelia, I have used the atom bomb as an example, even today, in a live panel, and thank you for mentioning the website protectnaturenow.com. You can see the 16-minute film, Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, and you can contact your congresspeople, etc. So I use the analogy that we know, without a doubt, that you never give an atom bomb to a child and say, oh, don't press the red button. But people don't think in terms of the problems associated with releasing a genetically engineered microbe, that it may, like, we didn't need a pandemic to know that microbes can go around the world. But we also know that microbes can mutate. Everyone knows these things. But they may not realize that microbes can swap genetic material. So if you create, if that child, instead of giving them an atom bomb, give them a CRISPR kit and create a viable organism, that organism may be a plague to our children's 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 children, because it may have a combination that's not available naturally that gives some survival advantage so that it survives and passes it on, and it becomes part of ecosystems around the world. So it's interesting, at eight lectures, I asked the audience, Amelia, what do you think is more dangerous for planetary survival? Do you think it will be genetic engineering or climate change? And all the audiences, on average, said genetic engineering. I was shocked because some of them were actually at climate change conferences. So people realize that the when you destroy the nature of nature in a self-propagating way and you cannot reverse it, that presents an existential threat that is unprecedented.
We're still taking calls with Jeffrey Smith. Let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hello there, Mr. White. Welcome to the program.
Hey, George, I thought you were going to call me corny. When I heard Tommy wasn't answering you last night, I thought they got Tommy.
Depends on the subject matter. If it's serious, I call you Mr. White. If it's not, I call you corny.
Okay. All right, George. George and Jeffrey. George, that caller, John from Pennsylvania, always blames the U.S. and stuff, so I pretty much don't like him. I was trained at the Kim School at Anniston, Alabama, at Fort McClellan. I was a military police officer, but we trained for the Russians releasing some type of biohazard weapon, and it seems like the Chinese have done it. But I know we've done things here in America like the Tuskegee experiment, and then George had mentioned something where we had sprayed some America. I think it's around Detroit or somewhere.
St. Louis.
And so, I mean, we've done our bad things too, but Jeffrey, I believe that they're ahead of you now, and they've released, just like this virus, I think, George, think it might be asked, I think the Chinese did this on purpose to get rid of Trump. And my dad died of this virus, and he wore a mask and did everything. He was 92, a Korean War vet. Now, they say it's highly infectious and contagious. I'm 60 years old now. He died in December of 2020. I've never felt anything. I would have thought it would have got me. But I'm just curious. Do you think they're ahead of you now? And I think, and George brings it out, I think the mark of the beast technology, you can see where they want the palms read at these Whole Foods now and stuff. And I see in some California schools, they want these people, the students and the faculty, to take the vaccine or else they can't go to school. So I don't know if you're a biblical man. I'm the God, guns, and gold man, the Bible, bullets, and beans man. So do you think there's a biblical aspect to this too? And thank you, George and Jeff. God bless both of you.
Okay, Cornelius. Sure thing. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Cornelius. And by the way, in Anniston, Alabama, that was the home of a Monsanto plant that was producing PCBs, and it was poisoning the town. I'm not sure if it was the same time you were there, but Monsanto hired a consultant who reported that he put fish in a local stream, and within 10 seconds, they shed their skin, spurted blood, and floated to the top.
Oh.
But the result of Monsanto, their one memo says, we can't afford to lose $1 of business. And they hid the fact that they were poisoning the people of Anniston, Alabama. I talked to one healthcare practitioner who was seeing people who were extremely sick. And he didn't know what it was, and he was trying all sorts of complicated protocols. But no one wanted to blow the whistle on Monsanto because they might lose their job. So
hold on, Jeffrey. We'll come back for more. I'll let you pick up that story, and we'll take final calls in a moment. Next hour, Rick McCallum joins us from the Hollywood Ghost Hunters. We're going to talk about ghost hunting. His latest book is called Ghosts Believe in Me, so I'm looking forward to that. And we'll take calls in our final hour with Rick. We're going to come back in a moment with our dear friend Jeffrey Smith and take final calls with him as well when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with Jeffrey Smith. His websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His film that just came out is called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. It's only 16 minutes long. It's easy to watch. It really is, and he's got a trailer there too. Jeffrey, I'll let you finish up on your statement before the break as we were talking about all the possibilities that are out there with these organisms.
Yes, I was talking to Cornelius, and I wanted to say, are we too late? Are they out ahead of us? Well, from what I can tell, in the area of microbes and the microbiome, which is what I'm looking at, there's very few companies that are actually releasing genetically engineered microbes consciously out in the environment. Bayer Monsanto's doing one with a joint venture, and that's very, very dangerous. But there's just one or two that are major players. If we wait a little longer, it can become a million microbes released, literally a million microbes released in the next generation. So I don't think we're too late, but I think it's urgent.
Well, you may be right on all counts there, Jeffrey. The big question is, again, they're dabbling in this, and there's no legislation. They just seem to be doing what they want. But what's the long-range goal?
Well, I can tell you that the short-range goal was to try and convince governments and consumers that the new types of genetic engineering wasn't genetic engineering at all. So they're trying to convince, they had a meeting, I think it was in Bulgaria about 5 years ago, and the number one goal of the biotech industry meeting was to create a situation where there was no regulations, no labeling, no consumer rejection, because they had faced tremendous backlash against consumers, against, you know, I was part of that backlash and was orchestrated. And so they were able to convince some of their allies in government to simply give a pass. So they want to be able to take patents out and basically change the nature of nature and tinker. Now, scientists can do that, and they're often well-intentioned. So there can be 100,000 different scientists using gene editing. When you ask, what is Monsanto's goal? What are they out for? You know, we've been looking at some of their documents that were made public because of these lawsuits recently. There's no wonder that they have been voted most evil corporation year after year. They knew. I remember debating on the TV show The Doctors with their toxicologist Donna Farmer, who said, I believe as a mother and as a scientist in this chemical glyphosate. And when the documents were made public, I searched her name, and there she was, telling another person at Monsanto, we can't say that Roundup doesn't cause cancer. There she was, ghostwriting an article, removing the sentence that suggests that glyphosate with part of Roundup creates or can promote miscarriages. There she was, acknowledging that the deaths of certain lab animals could be related to Roundup. So everything she had said on the air was a lie. So I contacted the producer at The Doctors, showed the evidence, and they did an entire hour-long show with me and with Brent Wisner, who ended up trying and winning the trials against Bayer Monsanto for basically causing the cancer of people that used it.
I wonder who orchestrated the sale of Monsanto to Bayer, because as soon as Bayer bought the Monsanto, they were hit with multi-million-dollar liabilities.
Oh, it was terrible. Monsanto put aside about $260 million for their entire legal budget for the cancer threat. The first judgment by the jury was $289 million.
Yep, one case.
One case. It was simply stunning. And now they're trying to settle for like $12 billion, but it's all falling apart because they're trying to limit future cases if they come up. And there was something that was released today where they actually won a preliminary judgment against someone who wasn't even dealing with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and they paid him to appeal it, because if they win in the appeal, then it can go to the Supreme Court, and then they can have precedent in the Supreme Court. So the lawyers who've been litigating were furious because they were basically paying someone who was suing them
to sue them
to appeal. It was just, I mean, it's typical Monsanto, where they find a way to manipulate using money to try and figure out how they can get the loopholes of the courts.
Let's go to Walter in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt, go ahead.
George, as usual, it's always great to talk to you, buddy.
Thank you, Walter.
George, as I said previously, my parents didn't send me to college for nothing. Now, you know, we got it talking about Roundup, and I was going to talk about GMOs or GEOs, genetically engineered. I just want to say something about Roundup. And I've heard, with all due respect to Mr. Smith, I also consider myself a steward of the environment. I'm an environmentalist, but I think that Roundup was a great discovery, a great chemical tool that farmers and gardeners can use, to produce cheap and plentiful food with the minimal labor. Now, I hear Mr. Smith mention glyphosate. Now, that's only part of the chemical term for Roundup. It's the full term is glyphosate isopropylamine.
But that's the cancer causer, right?
George, amines are found in all life forms. They're organic compounds. They're all biodegradable. We hear the term amino acids, which are form the basis of DNA, the nucleotide bases. Now, you know, there I can you know, giving you an example, there's an amine called phenylethylamine, which sounds like
Walter, hold on though. Let me ask you a question. Are you saying glyphosate does not cause cancer?
Well, George, anything in excess, you know, the way they determine whether it causes cancer, like they'll feed the mice nothing but Roundup, and then when they, you know, when a number of them die of cancer, then they conclude, well, it causes cancer.
All right. Well, let's get Jeffrey in for a second. Jeffrey, he's defending Roundup. Go ahead.
Boy, I'd love to have a long talk with you, Walter. Let me just share some information. First of all, it's true that Monsanto declared Roundup biodegradable, but they were found guilty of false advertising by a New York court where they found that it was only a 2% degradation in a month. But they continue to call it biodegradable in Europe until the French Supreme Court fined them for false advertising. It turns out that the half-life, the longest recorded half-life of glyphosate in the soil, is as much as 22 years. It does tend to break down a lot quicker than that, but it depends on a lot of elements in the soil. Second, the evaluation of cancer is a lot more sophisticated, but to give you an example of just how powerful this glyphosate is, and Roundup in particular, as part of the formulation, they gave a parts per trillion to rats in the drinking water. Parts per trillion, and the rats, and it caused non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Now, it is in the rain, in the air, in the food supply in the United States, and we have more than 30% of the U.S. population with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And those that have higher levels of glyphosate in their urine have the more dangerous, the more damaging form of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And the EPA believed Monsanto that it was safe, and they allow in the drinking water 437,500 times the amount of glyphosate on a per body weight per day basis than the rats ate. In other words, what the EPA considers to be safe is a massive amount, but what can actually cause damage is a tiny amount, parts per trillion and low parts per billion. So it's true that Monsanto said it was safer than table salt, but we know, because of the documents made public of the lawsuit, how they lied, how they hired scientists to do research or to do evaluations. When they didn't like what those people said, they fired that researcher, and then ghost wrote their own papers, paid scientists to sign them, and then submitted those to the EPA. But that wasn't enough. We now know that they had lapdogs in the EPA, like Jess Rowland, who was in charge of the committee that determined that glyphosate doesn't cause cancer. And we know why. He was working on behalf of Monsanto, and he chose Monsanto studies, whereas the World Health Organization looked at peer-reviewed published studies and said, oh, no, no, this is a class 2A carcinogen, and it definitely causes cancer in animals. So there's a lot of evidence. In fact, the last thing I'll leave you with, Walter, is I think it's so bad, I show about 30 charts showing a specific slope of increase of diseases ranging from ADHD and autism and irritable bowel, et cetera, and I show the slope of increase of the use of Roundup on genetically engineered soy and corn. And it is breathtaking how closely correlated they are. Now, correlation doesn't prove causation, but then we break down and show how each of those diseases is linked to the mode of action of glyphosate and what it does in the body. And I can speak for hours, and I have, about some of those things that it does. It seems
well, so happen. Have juries, right?
It's true. And they were so pissed off at they were so uncomfortable. Thank you. Thank you, George. They were so uncomfortable with Monsanto that they, in one case, they fined Monsanto $2 billion in punitive damages for one couple. Of course, the judge reduced.
Was Roundup first created for weed control or insect control?
It was first, well, glyphosate was first created to clean minerals off of industrial pipes and boilers because it grabs, it's a chelator. And then Monsanto bought the chemical and patented it because it, when they let it go on the ground, it killed the grass. It killed all of the plants. So it was always an herbicide.
Okay, let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Joseph, go ahead. Let's squeeze you in.
Yeah, if you look at India, what happened there, do you see that as going for the big market, a lot of people there, or as maybe predatory? These people are disorganized, not well-heeled. We can use them as like an experiment. They'll breed ground for what we're trying to do.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, it turns out I remember speaking to a Monsanto researcher, and I pointed out to him that there was no way in the world that they could release a genetically engineered crop and guarantee that it wouldn't cause serious allergic reaction and possible death. And when I nailed him on the science, he said to me, well, you know, we need GMOs because of India's agriculture. I've seen it. It's in disarray. We need to bring GMOs there. Well, they brought genetically engineered cotton to India, and it was a disaster. There's been about 250,000 farmer suicides from farmers that planted Monsanto's cotton and were not able to get enough money to even pay back the high-interest loans. They were facing loss of their property. We know that there's so much devastation in India because of that. So, yeah, it was a predatory practice, and it was based on a lot of inaccurate information that was spread in the marketplace. So, yeah, India was a disaster. It's kind of like almost a genocide from the side of the biotech industry.
Is Roundup still being sold, Jeffrey, and have they taken glyphosate out of it?
No, Roundup is still being sold. Glyphosate is what they call the active ingredient. But many, many people around the country have banded together and caused their cities or their counties to stop using it. You can go to RoundupRisks.com. We teach people how to do it there. And I also want to recommend, since we're getting to the top of the hour, if people can go to ProtectNatureNow.com, watch the movie. I also would like to encourage your listeners to make a donation to the Institute. We're a nonprofit organization. And as you know by now, what we're doing is urgent. It's mission critical. If you can make a recurring monthly donation, then we will be able to plan on it and hire people and open up offices, et cetera. So that's I rarely do that appeal on this show. I've been on so many times.
You've never done that before.
Yeah, but right now we need to build a global movement very quickly, because all living beings and all future generations depend on us locking down GMO microbes so that they don't escape.
And your film, of course, is out there now, 16 minutes of hard-hitting information. Did you write it, or did you have writers work with you?
Oh, no, I wrote it. I directed it. I worked with an editor and gave him meticulous feedback, drove him crazy. It took him a long time, but I wanted every single transition, every single text, just the way I want it. And I've gotten some very positive feedback. So go to ProtectNatureNow.com. Watch Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. It just was released on Monday. We had released the trailer about 3 months ago. We have about 500,000 views.
Okay, Jeffrey, thanks for being on the program again. And, you're a hero for a lot of people, to be sure. Up next, we're going to be going ghost hunting with the Hollywood Ghost Hunters on Coast to Coast. Rick McCallum joins us, so get ready. And if you are prone to get scared, well, still listen to the show. What the heck? We'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget our YouTube channel, Coast to Coast AM Official. Subscribe to that. Have some fun. We'll be back.